My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. In the snow-covered mountains of Tibet and Nepal, it is called Yeti. Westerners dubbed it the Abominable Snowman. In the Canadian wilderness, they are known as Sasquatch, and in the U.S., Bigfoot. It falls in the realm of cryptozoology and remains one of the unanswered mysteries in a world where hard science gives way to the unexplained. My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Mike Dupler, has been on a quest to find answers to this and many other fascinating questions about the strange and mysterious. Mike Dupler is a paranormal author and outdoorsman, a native Ohioan. He has sought adventures across the United States and attends cryptozoology conferences across the country. His website is MikeDupler.com, that's D-U-P-L-E-R, and he joins us this week to share his findings and his new book, On the Trail of Bigfoot, Tracking the Enigmatic Giants of the Forest. Please join me in welcoming to Destination Unlimited, Mike Dupler. Welcome, Mike.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us and sharing this amazing information that you've put together in your new book. So let's start with sharing with our listeners your early life and how it led you to your interest in the paranormal and cryptozoology.
I actually started out hunting ghosts, watching ghost hunters on TV. I figured I could go to like an abandoned prison or something in my area and see if I could catch anything, you know, as far as ghosts or whatever. I had no idea what I was doing, but it has evolved quite a bit from that.
And as a paranormal investigator, you wrote a book entitled Death Explained, A Ghost Hunter's Guide to the Afterlife. You say that as an investigator, you learned the paranormal is really normal. Please explain.
What I found, what I do is actually I do ghost photography. I have honed the skills of ghost photography. I don't do an actual ghost investigation like you see on TV where they ask the questions and get EVPs and that type of thing. And going to various locations across the country, I have found that if a location is reported to be haunted, then it usually is. And I have found, I have caught so many different photos of ghosts in various situations that it seems to be, when they're in their natural environment, then, how can I say this? Their existence is natural for where they're at, for what they're doing. It's not something to be afraid of. It's not something that's actually supernatural. It's something that occurs once we pass on. When we go to the other side, so to speak, which would be like a parallel existence. There are like thin spots or whatever to where you can actually encounter them in their environment. A lot of ghost hunters call this a residual haunting. I believe it's just an interaction with where they're actually at.
And
if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. In my experience doing my own paranormal investigations for many years, my take from this entire field is that the essence of who we are, whether you call it the soul, the spirit, is a form of energy. And when our body ceases to exist, as science teaches us, energy never ends. It just changes from form to form. And that what we're connecting with is that energy that still exists, whether it's in adjacent to our realm or wherever people believe it to be, but it's a form of energy and that's what we're connecting with.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And in your book, Death Explained, what do you share in that book?
A theory that I came up with. I had an epiphany. I was watching Ghost Hunters on TV, and they were at the a train terminal in Buffalo, New York, abandoned train terminal, and they said they were having a conversation with a female ghost through their K2 meter, whatever, light up the lights for yes or no, and that type of thing. And it turned out that they said that this female ghost was actually waiting for a train in the 1940s. And I just had this epiphany that, okay, we exist in space-time. When we pass on to the next level, we can actually exist in time-space, to where we, in our environment, we can move anywhere in space, theoretically. We can go to the end of the universe. There's nothing that keeps us from doing that. It's just distance. But when we're in time-space, you can move through time, and when you pass on, you can actually move to an era of time that you're most comfortable with and continue your existence that way.
That's fascinating. So in essence, when we go to that other place, whatever that is, that spirit, that energy that exists, that soul of ours, we're free to basically roam in time.
Exactly. That's why the soldiers in Gettysburg are still fighting the war. They're in 1865, and they don't feel that they've accomplished what they needed to accomplish.
Absolutely. I remember being out in Wyoming several years ago and visiting the Little Bighorn site, the Custer National Monument, and also hearing and experiencing things there that were probably taking place all those years ago when it originally happened.
Exactly.
So I understand exactly what you're talking about. So a strange finding while visiting Oregon ignited your passion to search for Bigfoot. Tell us what happened.
Okay. My daughter and I were in Oregon. We went to Portland. We actually went through the Shanghai tunnels, like taking ghost pictures and that type of thing. And we rented a cabin in an Oregon State Park, which was halfway between Portland and the ocean. So one morning we decided we'd go to the ocean and spend the day. And we were driving the back roads looking for the freeway. And I noticed out in a field that there were these trees stuck in the ground upside down with the roots sticking up. I do have a picture of that in the book. And I had seen a documentary that was Myths and Monsters of Alaska. And one of the segments of this documentary was Prince of Wales Island, where the locals said that the hairy men take blown down trees and stick them in the ground upside down as a territory marker. And I saw that and I says, there could be something to this. So when I got back to Ohio, I talked my sister into going squatching with me.
And what did you find?
When we went to Salt Fork State Park, because I got on the internet and was looking for Bigfoot hotspots in Ohio, and Salt Fork came up as the hotspot. If people didn't know this, Ohio, as far as sightings go, Ohio is the number 5 state in the country in sightings, which some people would find it hard to believe, being so populated or whatever. So we went to Salt Fork, didn't know what we're doing, parked the car, and we're walking a trail that goes around the lake. We wandered into a small ravine, and we sat down on the log. We figured we'd just sit there and listen for a while, see if we can hear anything. And my sister looked down and said, that looks like a track. And there was the perfect impression of what I would call a Bigfoot track pressed into the leaf litter. Now, we were 50, 75 yards off trail. So if somebody had put that there, it was just a total coincidence that anybody would find it. We actually found 2 tracks right there going up the hill. And that's what started our adventures there.
And what else did you find there in terms of these inverted trees?
We went back to the same spot a month or so later. Went back to the same spot and we were looking around. And we noticed on top of the hill by us that there were bent trees, which we didn't think was quite natural. So we climbed that hill, and on top of this hill, we found a bent trees. We found a Bigfoot structure. Now, I have pictures of that in my book. It'd be hard to describe. It's just logs configured in a certain way, but in an unnatural way. I looked around. There were no root bases. This was a natural tree fall. These had actually been placed there. And there were other interesting items around. There was this huge log that was placed against a tree, very heavy. So no, it would have taken a group of individuals to actually place this log there. And we went back several other times. And each time that I went there, I took pictures of this stick structure. And over time, I noticed that the structure had changed. Items had been added, items had been removed. It was just subtle changes. And it brought me to the conclusion that this could be a form of communication. When you change the structure, you change the message. You could be telling them that Aunt Bessie's in town, or you know, somebody left, we have new people here, or whatever. But being so scattered, they would need some type of communication other than verbal or hollering or whatever. But if you set up a structure in a strategic location and left messages, it would be easy to communicate or leave messages in that manner.
Now, for those who haven't gotten your book yet, the trees that were taken and turned upside down with the roots up and the tree into the ground, how big were these trees?
They were fairly substantial. I mean, these were not saplings. They must have weighed at least a couple hundred pounds. And to do this, you would need heavy equipment to do, I'm sure. And there was no sign of any heavy equipment activity or roads going to them or anything like that. They were just out in the field, stuck in the ground, you know?
And your interpretation of these is that these are actually territory markers?
That's the interpretation from the documentary that I saw.
What was your sense when you saw those for the first time in Oregon and then later in Ohio?
I was surprised this was an actual event that I encountered. Now, in the eastern United States, I haven't seen the trees stuck in the ground upside down. What I have found is they'll lean a tree against another tree upside down. It could be just a colloquial type of thing or a regional event where this is the way they do it, where on the West Coast, they stick them in the ground upside down.
Now, you talked about these stick structures or the structures that these creatures are making, and you're thinking that there's some form of communication. You said there were subtle changes each time. What were the subtle changes you found?
Well, there's like a main beam to the structure leaning against a fork in a tree, and then you have other logs or sticks placed around it. And what I noticed was that some of these smaller branches have been removed, some have been added. If somebody was going to hook this, you wouldn't think that they would go back from time to time and change it. So I believe that it would be a perfect way to communicate. And if that's true, then this has to be something that is taught and carried on from, you know, through generations to be able to read this.
Which would indicate a higher form of intelligence than an animal, basically.
Oh, absolutely.
That's fascinating. That's really fascinating. You also suggest that there's even evidence of some ritualistic structures attributed to them.
You can interpret these in many ways. Some of the structures that I've seen could be ritualistic in the manner that they're done and in the places that they're done. And one thing that came to mind was some of these could actually be artistic expression.
And you have pictures of those also in the book, correct?
Yes.
That's fascinating. That's really fascinating. Much of what you describe as we just said, suggests a higher level of intelligence in these creatures, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Why do you think they hide themselves away? Well, that's the big question, I guess. Why aren't they out there all the time?
That is the big question, and why why they are so elusive. It could be, there's a theory about Gigantopithecus in Asia. One reason why it went extinct was it encountered humans, and humans hunted them to extinction to control their territory or just to eliminate a possible menace. This could be a repressed memory from that. It's like we, most humans, cultures have a flood legend. This could be a repressed memory along those lines.
That's fascinating. Yeah, absolutely. You can think that if they had been hunted down, that they're in their genetics, there would have some type of encoding of a memory of these things that took place thousands and hundreds of thousands of years ago.
Exactly. Try to get close to a deer.
I'm sorry, say again?
Try to get close to a deer.
Absolutely. They know they have that sense of fear. You talked about Gigantopithecus in Asia. There were forms of Gigantopithecus found throughout Asia. Is that correct?
Yes.
And there were different species.
Yes, there were. There was a distinct species in India that was smaller than the Gigantopithecus that they found in China, which was basically about 10 foot tall. There was also another variety found in Vietnam. So they must have been around long enough to develop the regional traits.
You talked about Vietnam. When we were present in Vietnam during the war, did any of our service people find these or see these?
They called them rock apes.
Rock apes. And what did they describe them like?
A Bigfoot type creature, smaller than what Gigantopithecus would be, but territorial nature, a bit aggressive. They would climb trees and throw rocks and that type of thing. And these encounters were reported on both sides, on the American side, and the Viet Cong reported them also. So it wasn't just exclusive to us. It was seen by many during that war.
And these rock apes were bipedal. They walked upright on two legs. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what other characteristics did they demonstrate? Any of the characteristics that you described in terms of inverting trees or creating stick structures?
There was nothing reported along those lines, but they were in a combat situation. I doubt if they paid much attention to that type of thing.
That's interesting. Now, what you're talking about with the Bigfoot and the ones that we're familiar with in this continent, do they have some type, or do you think that they have some type of sixth sense, that they can sense things that are beyond our capabilities?
I had an interesting encounter. I was in an area that has a lot of evidence. There's structures, footprints, that type of thing. And my point and shoot camera, the shutter motor went out on it. So I was using my night vision camera that I ghost hunt with in a daytime mode. And I just take random pictures into the woods and see what I caught. And I caught a picture of what looks like a Bigfoot face impressed in the environment. It was really strange. And the other strange part was that this was in a Bigfoot active area. And what came to mind was there could be a possibility that they use something like a remote viewing. There's been reports of the CIA and espionage organizations using remote viewing to spy on other countries or whatever to get information. And it seems to be a viable reaction.
That's fascinating. We'll talk a little more about that in the next segment. My guest this week is Mike Dupler. He's the author of On the Trail of Bigfoot, Tracking the Enigmatic Giants of the Forest. Mike, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
The book is available on Amazon. It is also available through Barnes & Noble, and it's available on IndieBound.
And your website.
And my website, yes.
And your website is?
MikeDupler.com.
MikeDupler.com. That's spelled D-U-P-L-E-R. And we'll be back with more of Mike after these words on the Ohm Times Radio Network.
Ohm Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Ohm Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Imagine yourself being transported to India, to the banks of the Ganga and an ashram in Rishikesh. Visualize that you are welcome to satsang with an American sannyasi who shares the wisdom of her guru. Your visualization has manifested. Join Sathvi Bhagavati Saraswati for inspiration and transformation every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Ohm Times Radio.
The COVID-19 vaccines are starting to become available across the country. And as they become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help get me back to doing the things I love? Like going out to my favorite restaurants, meeting with friends in person, or going on vacation and traveling again? And can I do it all without putting my family and those I love at risk? And is it safe? You've got questions. That's normal. Which is why it's so important to get informed. The medical community has made it clear. The vaccines authorized for COVID-19 have met the highest safety standards and can help protect us. Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for all the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. That's GetVaccineAnswers.org. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Ohm Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What is Going On? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
He was the heart of your family, and he taught you our history. He helped you fix your first flat. He was the best backyard DJ around. And every time he'd tell a story, he'd own the room. But now more than ever, he may feel alone. Today, older adults and their loved ones are struggling to connect in a time when connection has never been more important. But there is something we can do. Embrace our older loved ones through StoryCorps Connect. With StoryCorps Connect, you can honor seniors remotely with an interview about their life. Every interview will be archived at the Library of Congress, becoming part of American history, so that years from now, future generations can listen in.
All right, Grandpa, what's one piece of advice you have for me?
Just three words, sweetheart. Live with courage.
The man that had the best stories still has plenty of stories to tell. So connect virtually and share the conversation of a lifetime at StoryCorpsConnect.org/AARP. Connect, honor, share. StoryCorps Connect. A message from AARP, StoryCorps, and the Ad Council.
back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this week is Mike Dupler. He's the author of On the Trail of Bigfoot, Tracking the Enigmatic Giants of the Forest. Mike, what physical evidence, in addition to the stick works and the trees, have you personally found?
I have cast 7 footprints and a partial handprint. I have heard vocalizations. I've heard tree knocks. What a tree knock is they'll take a branch or a log and just hit it against another tree to make a knocking noise. What I've understood about the tree knocks, when they do this, they only do it one time. And from what I've seen on my encounters, that this is just to alert others in the area that people are there. I've been growled at twice. I've heard it whistle. I've heard it whoop a couple times. But so far, I haven't been able to hear the famous howl like Bobo would do on Finding Bigfoot. I haven't heard that yet.
How close do you think you were actually physically close to the closest one?
30 feet.
Wow. Wow. Did you have a sense about it when you were that close? Did you feel something?
No.
Nothing at all. Your hair didn't stand up in the back of your neck. None of the things that we associate with sensing something that is very unusual near us.
No. Even when I ghost hunt, I cannot sense ghosts in my area. That could be why I'm so successful, is that I don't run away.
the fear factor doesn't kick in. I understand completely.
Exactly.
I understand. So now let's talk about these casts. How big were the biggest ones?
They actually average about 18 inches long and about 6 inches wide. The biggest one I've gotten was here in Tennessee, and it was 19 inches long.
Wow. Wow. And when you find these prints, are they usually, what's the stride length? Have you found them in other words, in a walking pattern, a stride pattern?
No. When I find prints, there's only a single print.
Wow. What do you think the reason is for that?
I found a juvenile print, which is a younger Sasquatch. And what this did was it followed a game trail, but it walked along the game trail in the leaf litter. So for one thing, it's not going to leave tracks. And the track that I found is when it crossed over the game trail, it broke through the frost into the moss underneath, and I was able to cast that track, but it kept going. One reason I think they do this is to keep their scent down. They're not going to walk a deer trail and leave a scent trail. They'll walk beside it, or they'll walk parallel to it to keep their scent down in a hunting situation.
Are there scents or smells associated with these creatures?
Many have reported a nasty stench associated with being near them, but I have never encountered that, and I've been fairly close to them several times. Apes have a scent gland in their armpits to where they'll create a sense as a defense mechanism. Bigfoot could be doing the same thing, but apparently I'm not fierce enough for him to do that.
And in your research of other people's work, have they measured a stride? Has anyone ever gotten a stride from footprint to footprint?
There was a trackway in Oregon where Cliff Brockman from Finding Bigfoot cast ungodly amount of tracks. He cast like 40 or 50 tracks or something. And I believe the stride was like close to 40 inches.
What would a normal human stride be? Like a tall human being, what would the normal stride?
I have measured my stride at 13 inches and I am 6 foot tall.
Wow. 40 inches. That is really a huge stride. So based on that stride of 40 inches, were they able to calculate the height and possible weight?
Well, Bigfoots walk differently than we do, okay? We walk heel to toe. They walk basically flat-footed, which would alter the stride a bit, but they figure probably about 8 to 10 feet tall.
Wow, 8 to 10 feet tall. That's pretty amazing. That's pretty amazing. Has anyone found either hair or scat samples?
There have been hair samples that people have found that they've submitted for DNA testing. Most of them turn out to be something else, deer, bear, whatever. And the few that come back with the DNA results usually come back as human. And Jeff Meldrum made a comment one time that we don't have enough DNA information to actually identify a Sasquatch as being a Sasquatch, but our DNA is very similar as our DNA is with chimpanzees. We share 90% of the same DNA with the chimpanzee. So if you're testing a DNA sample that's 90% human, it's going to pick it up as being human because it doesn't have the information for the other signatures.
Is there anything else that's been left behind by these creatures?
Basically, nothing that I have found, just the tracks and the structures and, like I said, the vocalizations. Some people do what's called gifting, where they'll put food out or shiny objects like marbles or you know, that type of thing to try to get an interaction with Bigfoot. And sometimes they will gift back with pine cones or something from the forest.
That's nice that they give you an exchange in return. That's wonderful, actually. Does that indicate to you that there's some type of a desire for reciprocity between them and us?
I don't think there is. If there was, they would be more open with their encounters. It could just be juveniles doing it, or females, or just messing with us, you know?
That's really funny. Yeah, I've seen a lot of commercials where they have a Bigfoot in there and messing with Squatch, right? I think those were the commercials for the beef jerky or something like that years ago.
Exactly.
Now, you talked about communication. You talked about knocks. What were those knocks like?
It was just like somebody taking a baseball bat and hitting a tree with it.
And if we do that, do they respond?
A lot of people do that. Sometimes they respond, sometimes they don't. I don't tree knock, and I don't howl, and I don't whoop in the woods because I don't know the context. If I'm out there howling and whooping, I might be giving them a mating call or something. You know, you never know. So I actually don't do that. I'm just there to observe and to find information.
Absolutely. But you've heard their knocks, though.
Yes.
And it's just a single knock, like rapping a bat against a tree. And what do you think do you think that's their way of saying, hey, there are people here? Or is that their way of saying, hey, come to this side? Or any sense about what the communication's about?
I believe that is just an alert sound. It's just humans are here, or it's just something that says, pay attention, that type of thing.
That's fascinating. Now, you mentioned Professor Jeff Meldrum. He is an anthropologist and an expert on primate feet. When you met him, what did you discuss with him?
We've met a couple times. I actually went to a footprint casting class that he put on, which is very interesting. I've asked him about structures and that type of thing, but he's more into the locomotion part, the actual physical attributes of the feet. There's a lot of people who don't think much of the structures because they can be hoaxed, but you have to understand where they're at and how they're made to determine if they're hoaxed or not, because I've seen hoax ones, and I've seen natural ones.
And with Professor Meldrum, with Jeff Meldrum, what was his takeaway? What does he tell you? What does he teach?
He believes that this is an unknown primate. He believes that this exists, it's out there. They're leaving tracks, and We don't know what it is. We can't find it for some reason. They're too elusive. But he fully believes that this creature is real.
And the samples that he has, where does he get them from?
He gets some. He's cast some himself, but mainly he gets them from other researchers. And the ones that he has have been authenticated as being genuine. Because people have tried to pull the wool over his eyes, and he's caught them before.
And what areas of the country and the world has he got samples from?
Mostly out west. He's stationed in Idaho. So he's more concentrated in that area, the Pacific Northwest and Pacific Coast. Because there's quite a large population out there, but it's so vast that it's hard to find any evidence of it unless you go back in and if you research and know the territory.
And the story on this side of the world of these creatures, Sasquatch or Bigfoot, these are in the cultures of all of the indigenous people, be it the Native Americans or the Alaskans.
Exactly.
And what are the stories that they share? What do they say about these creatures?
When the Native Americans talk about this creature, it's usually associated with supernatural events, guardians of the forest. It could be that they are so elusive, they didn't interact with them the same way as they don't interact with us. They have to create myths and legends to explain their presence and why they're so elusive. So they give it supernatural abilities.
And are the stories that are shared by people in the continental United States different than the stories that are shared by, for example, the Aleutian Islands or Canada?
They basically run along the same lines. A lot of the stories that are told, a lot of the myths are about them grabbing children or carrying people off or that type of thing. And I think that they just used this to keep the people in line. Don't go in the woods after dark and that type of thing. But the similarities from coast to coast are quite unique. They're different as far as the different myths and legends, but the story of the Sasquatch is still there.
And we know these stories here, and we know the stories in Asia. What about Europe?
There are stories in Europe. There are actually Bigfoot groups on Facebook. There's one that I've seen quite a bit, and it's from Ireland. If you look at, have you ever read Beowulf?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There's a theory that Grendel could have been a Bigfoot-type creature.
Wow, I never thought of that. That's amazing. And what about other parts of what about Africa?
Africa, I researched this and I didn't see much as far as Bigfoot type creatures in Africa where you think they would be. There's in Asia, you have the Gigantopithecus, and there's stories of this type of creature in the Philippines. In Asia or India, Vietnam, in Central Asia. Not much, like I said, in Africa, and there's some in Europe, but mainly in North America.
And what about, just out of curiosity, like the North Pole or the Antarctic regions?
I think they do have some stories there, but I think they're carryovers from encounters with other tribes further south.
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. Thank you for that. My guest, Mike Dupler, his book, On the Trail of Bigfoot, Tracking the Enigmatic Giants of the Forest. We'll be back with more of Mike and his stories after these words on the Om Times Radio Network.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose. To link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions, but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that we can give our daughters everything they need to grow and learn. But not every child can focus on classes and play dates.
Nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. face hunger. That's 1 in 6. School lunch might be their only meal each day, and it's heartbreaking to imagine any child going to bed hungry. We're dreaming of a perfect day when kids can smile, play, and just be kids without worrying about where their next meal will come from. Feeding America is working to make that perfect day a reality.
Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste. That food is given to families and children in need. Being a kid should be about doing things that make an ordinary day extraordinary. Learning to play an instrument, building a sandcastle, hosting tea parties. Hunger should never be an obstacle to growing up.
You can help end childhood hunger in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
I'm Kathy Williams, host of Sexy Mom Abundant Life radio show on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. On the show, we explore living abundantly in every area of your life. Ways to let go of limiting patterns and beliefs and to step into the flow of creativity and possibility, knowing you are supported by the universe.
Vox Novus expands the horizons of Destination Unlimited, providing a platform for popular culture, lifestyles, interfaith spirituality, personal empowerment, environmental concerns, inspiration, and so much more. Each week, I will present authors and experts who will share from their experience and offer tools to help us navigate this rapidly changing world. Join me, Victor the Voice Furman, each Thursday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio and listen to the Vox Novus, the new voice.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Sterling, and I know what it's like to struggle with mental health issues. If you have a friend that's going through a tough time, now's the perfect moment to reach out. Learn how to start the conversation at seizetheawkward.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Jed Foundation.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with. All day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese. And guess what? Egg rolls showed up. Like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Dad, I picked up your pills, made your lunch, and your laundry is done.
When you care for a loved one, you take care of everything. But are you taking care of yourself? Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Thank you. back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this week, Mike Dupler. He's the author of On the Trail of Bigfoot, Tracking the Enigmatic Giants of the Forest. Mike, when you were talking about the indigenous peoples, you were starting to allude to the fact that they give the attribute perhaps of something supernatural or even transdimensional to these creatures. What do they say?
A lot of the stories that they have is more along the lines of a ghost type or something in the forest that comes and goes, that'll disappear in front of you. They give it more of a spiritual aspect rather than a flesh and blood creature. And like I said, I believe this is due to the fact that they're so elusive and they are the actual kings of their domains. They're as much Bigfoot as we are human. They are so at home in their surroundings that they can basically do what they want, and you'll never know it.
Absolutely. The History Channel series, The Secret of Skinwalker Ranch, just started its second season. Is there a connection with the Skinwalkers, in your opinion, and Bigfoot?
There was one occurrence that I can recall where some residents of the ranch, I believe they were owners of the ranch, had a situation where they saw something coming up the driveway that they thought was like an RV or something, and they ran down to intercept it because they didn't want it running over fences or whatever. And it turned out that this was more like a UFO type vehicle, and they watched as this UFO or whatever was this glowing light stopped, and something like a Bigfoot type creature actually got out of this device.
And do you think that's because the Bigfoot type creature is the alien, or because it was picked up and then dropped off again?
In my opinion, I don't think that Bigfoots are alien. I don't think they're from another planet. I don't think they're involved in UFOs. For one thing, they're not even known to use fire, so how would they traverse the universe? It could have been just something that they picked up for study and then dropped back off.
Now, you had mentioned that Ohio, I think you said, was the fifth most sightings. Is that correct?
Yes.
What if you had to pick a hot spot in the United States, the number one hot spot for Bigfoot activity, what would it be?
I would say Ohio.
Oh, really? Ohio, even though you said it was fifth in the number of sightings. Why would you say Ohio as opposed to someplace else?
Well, the other four are in the Pacific Northwest. You have Washington State, you have California, Idaho, and those areas out there are so vast that to actually find something like that, it would take, you need to be a local, you need to know the area, you need to know the history of it. It's like the difference between fishing in a pond and fishing in the ocean. I'd rather fish in a pond. In Ohio, we have industrialization, you have communities. The Bigfoot populations are pretty much condensed into certain areas that they're familiar with. So it's much easier to go into these areas to find evidence than it is to go to like Washington State to the deep woods there and try to find something.
So within the state of Ohio, what's the number one hotspot? Number one.
Number one hotspot is Salt Fork State Park, which is in eastern Ohio outside of Cambridge.
And that's where you and your sister had that sighting, is that correct?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit more about that place. What kind of things take place in addition to the Bigfoot activity? Anything else strange up there?
Let me see. Well, there's a lot of hunting and fishing, that type of thing. There's nothing other than the Bigfoot. I'm not aware of any hauntings or interdimensional encounters along those lines there, but the Bigfoot is more than enough to keep your interest.
Absolutely. How many sightings would you say exist per year?
Reported sightings?
Yes, sir.
I would say probably at least half a dozen.
Wow. Pardon me one second. Sorry about that. And they're concentrated in that area.
Right. There's actually an area that they call the Bigfoot Triangle that goes from like Salt Fork to Akron to Northeast Ohio. Do you know who Matt Moneymaker is?
No.
He is the leader of the Finding Bigfoot group. You familiar with Finding Bigfoot?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Matt Moneymaker is the leader of that group, and he's actually from Ohio. He's from that area, and his first encounters were in that area, and that's what got him started.
And what are the other hot spots that are in Ohio besides that triangle?
Zaleski State Forest, which is in Southeast Ohio. And there is a national forest in eastern Ohio that is quite active also.
Do you and fellow cryptozoologists share and compare your research?
I'm not a cryptozoologist.
You don't call yourself. Okay. But do you share and compare research with others who are chasing who are looking for Bigfoot?
There's a lot of information shared on the groups on the internet. A lot of it is conjecture or just falsehoods, people just making things up. But a lot of valid information is on the internet as far as the groups and that type of thing. And that's where our books come in also.
And does this research seem to indicate similar types of activities?
Usually, yes.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, why don't you consider yourself a cryptozoologist?
I'm more of a paranormal investigator.
Okay.
So I am not a Bigfoot expert, and I'm not a cryptozoologist because I don't go after other cryptids.
Okay. That explains it. Thank you very much. For those of listeners who are not familiar, cryptozoologists specialize in not only Bigfoot, but also the various other, the Loch Ness Monster, various other types of creatures, that the Mothman, that type of thing, other things that are in existence that have been seen and have been in our world or supposedly in our world. But that's something that's considered to be in the animal kingdom. And what Mike is doing is more as a paranormal investigator, and I honor and appreciate that. Thank you, sir. At the end of the day, what would you share with someone who wanted your opinion on the nature of these beings?
These are living creatures, flesh and blood. They're not interdimensional. They're not aliens. They're not Nephilim. They're not spiritual beings. They are very intelligent, very at home in the woods that they're at, and they're funded to research.
And if humanity got out of the way, do you think they'd flourish?
Absolutely.
You think it does?
There are more Bigfoot out there than what people think.
Absolutely. You think that one day that they may, you know, when we mess things up, because apparently we're doing a lot of messing up, that they would reclaim?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No question.
Wonderful. What would you like readers to take away from On the Trail of Bigfoot?
I try to be honest in what I'm writing, to tell what actually happened. I'm not making anything up. The pictures in my book are mine. I took every picture in there. I didn't pull any from the internet or anything like that. It's just, I'm just trying to tell my story of what I found. It's very interesting. It's true. And I tried to do my best with it.
And what's next for Mike Dupler?
Still thinking about it.
What's your next book going to be?
I'm thinking about a ghost book.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Anything in particular?
Like I said, I do ghost photography, and I have some really interesting pictures.
That's wonderful. My guest, Mike Dupler, he's the author of On the Trail of Bigfoot, Tracking the Enigmatic Giants of the Forest. Mike, one more time, please tell our listeners where they can get your book and find out more about you.
The book is available on Amazon. It's available through Barnes & Noble, and it's available through Indie Bound, I-N-D-I-E, Bound. You can order it from their website.
And what's your website, sir?
My website is MikeDupler.com. I also have an author page on Facebook, which is Author Mike Dupler on Facebook.
And that's spelled D-U-P-L-E-R. Mike, thank you so much for joining us this week. And when you have more, we want you back, please.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you.
And thank you for joining us on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor, the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful week.